NBC's coast-to-coast network of independent and affiliated stations, the University of Chicago Roundtable. Today, the Roundtable presents the first of two important programs on human rights. In 1948, the General Assembly of the United Nations passed the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. At the General Assembly of the United Nations that begins its sessions next week, a draft covenant of human rights will be presented. If it is approved, that covenant will come before the United States Senate for ratification as a treaty. What are human rights? What do they mean to the people of the world today? What are the disagreements about them? What is their practical importance in the present Korean crisis? Today, the Roundtable discusses these basic questions. Next week, the Roundtable will discuss how can human rights be enforced throughout the world. As a contribution to information about human rights, the University of Chicago Roundtable announces a new home study radio correspondence course on human rights. This new Roundtable home study course has been especially prepared by Richard McKeon, Distinguished Service Professor of Philosophy at the University of Chicago, who served as Rapporteur of the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organizations Committee on the Philosophical Basis of Human Rights. Basing the course on an international symposium of authorities on human rights, Mr. McKeon has prepared four lesson chapters presenting fundamental issues, agreements, and questions as analyzed by 31 authorities from all parts of the world. This discussion and these questions by Mr. McKeon are reprinted in today's Roundtable pamphlet. Listen for further details following today's program. Participating in today's discussion of human rights are Alice Bebla, Yugoslav delegate to the United Nations, Emilio N. Oriba, member from Uruguay of the United Nations Commission, and Richard McKeon, philosopher of the University of Chicago. And now, Mr. McKeon.
For the past 2.5 months, we have watched the development of a war with increasing pessimism and mounting tension. For a month, the Security Council has been unable to come even to the consideration of the problem of aggression in Korea. Next Tuesday, the General Assembly will meet to consider, among other things, the Korean War and a proposed covenant on human rights. This is a time to talk about how important it is to consider human rights in the crisis of the world. Bebla, your country has worked with the UN Commission on Human Rights. Do you think the constructive work of the Commission is wasted because of the Korean War?
In no way, definitely. I think that this time was not wasted. We worked hard, and we will continue to work hard, and I think the fact that the United Nations are working on that issue shows and helps to bring the whole cause of human rights ahead.
Oriba, do you see an immediate and practical relevance of human rights to the present situation?
Yes, I certainly do. For one thing, I consider that the attack of the North Koreans against the South Koreans could not have been launched with such strength and as a surprise attack had the North Korean government been a real democratic one. Just think what would have happened if there was an opposition in North Korea, if the executive were responsible before Congress and they had to explain to the people why they were rearming, why they were sending their sons against the South Korea.
Even the question of information would have been important.
Of course, the question of information would have been fundamental as the development of the situation has shown. On the other hand, I think too that the North Koreans would never have launched the attack they launched against South Korea if they had expected the South Koreans to offer strong resistance.
We're agreed then that human rights are important at this moment. That is not, I think, a conviction which all men share. I know that many Americans have been looking on the problem of human rights with increasing pessimism. It looks to many of them as if the situation in human rights has gotten worse in the last 40 years. And this pessimism, I suspect, is more widespread than that. And therefore, before we go into the question of the human rights in this situation, we ought to explain a little the reasons for this optimism. Oriba, what do you think?
Well, I think there are several reasons for optimism. As a matter of fact, Maybe we're considering it a little too common because we see every day and we read every day about it in the newspapers. But this is the first time that there is an international organization where the representatives of the governments of the world discuss openly and freely the question of human rights in their own countries and in the neighboring countries, in all the countries of the world.
One reason, then, is that we now have an international organization which is a forum. I suppose a second reason is that the long history of human rights presents a sweep which is carrying us, whether we know it or not, further. Is there a further reason?
Well, and if we look, for instance, at the achievements of the recent meeting of the Commission of Human Rights of the United Nations, we see that this commission has prepared a draft covenant of human rights. And what is very important is that this draft covenant includes in its text several articles which try to establish an organization of international control of the execution of the obligation of respecting human rights. This is very important because up to the moment all the countries of the world agree on certain principles, but when the time comes of achieving an agreement on means of enforcement, then the unanimity disappears.
I take it that your point would hold even though at present there are some difficulties in achieving the practical operation. In other words, the door is open for implementation. Debla, do you see reason for optimism in the operation of UN with respect to human rights?
Certainly. Well, here is a point I wanted to make just a moment ago, that maybe one of the reasons for the pessimism was the impression the public could have got from our discussions in Lake Success that we advance very slowly and that there are such differences of opinion that we'll never reach our goal.
That impression was widespread in August.
Certainly. But I think that the main reason for such a long and difficult discussion were the inherent difficulties in the problem.
The problems
are really tremendous and involved, extremely involved.
And you feel that the difficulty comes from the fact that you're really facing the problems.
That's right, that we work hard on them. We might spend another year. I would like our listeners to have the impression that this General Assembly will solve the question and vote on a covenant of human rights. I don't think so. The questions asked by the Social and Economic Council would rather point to the following procedure, that the General Assembly only will give some general ideas and that the problem will come back to the Commission on Human Rights and that we will have one more year of discussions of this.
You know, Bebel, I'm a philosopher and I like to translate these things into general terms. It seems to me that what you're saying is that in the United Nations, where the representatives of nations meet to debate, the debate for peace is against the constant danger of resort to violence. And consequently, and this is the point I want to make, the moral issue is much more important than elsewhere. The moral issue is coming to the fore. We may begin to realize more fully throughout the world what we mean by the expression, we the people of the world. But this has been rather large and general. I wonder if we can be more specific. We ought to find out whether we can say concretely, what do you mean by human rights? How do we think about them? How do we operate? Ariba, how would you answer that question?
I think that there might be many definitions of human rights. There has been, as a matter of fact, very different listings of human rights.
Well, is the listing the only way in which we can do it? They're a long list, they differ?
Yes, they're different in the listing, but what is true and what we are discovering more and more now in the United Nations is that at the basis of the whole conception of human rights, there is the idea of the equality and equal dignity of man, the idea that all men are alike all over the world.
Well, this is an old idea. This is an idea which is shared by all of the great religions of the world. The ancient philosophers talked about it.
Of course. It's an old idea, but Sometimes during the last 10 or 15 years, many persons in the world thought that that old idea was almost forgotten.
Yes, but now it is coming forward. I think there's another point that we ought to make in a sort of general way, namely that there's a great deal of difference about whether human rights are something inherent in the nature of man. That's the way they are talked about in all of the classical statements, like the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of the Rights of Men and Citizens of the French, or whether they're not something that you can find in human nature by probing, but rather something which comes out of the evolution of society, the history of man, what we can do living in the context of each other. Bebler, yes, how do you see the development of human rights?
I agree naturally with the opinion that human rights are relative. It means that concrete, materialized human rights of a human being are closely linked with the level of development of society.
And as though you're talking about human rights somewhere in the heavens and the sky.
That's right. This leads us to another point which I like to stress because I feel it important. To the point that in looking concretely on human rights as they were throughout history, we find that there is a general trend towards more and more equality of rights. I wouldn't say broader and broader rights, because, I don't know, a Roman slave owner, for himself as a person, had very broad rights.
The free man in Rome was free.
Was very free, freer than we are now. He could kill his slaves or do anything. We hadn't. We have now this right over our fellow men. It means more and more equality. If you look at it from this point of view, then you see this general trend. It means that we are really advancing social formation to another.
But let's enumerate. It's rather curious the way in which human rights have turned up in particular points. For example, there were quite early the demand for freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of opinion, freedom of assembly. These, which are now under the general head of political and civil rights, rights which are guaranteed against interference, but joined, particularly in the beginnings of modern democracies, with the right of the citizen to participate in government, to determine the way in which his whole social life will be determined. This is the first group of human rights that have been set up. What about the more recent human rights? These, incidentally, are a national declaration. Arriba, they're beginning to move into international field now.
Yes, we can notice that there's been a general trend, and it is particularly remarkable to see that after the great wars in history, in the great pieces conference and the great conference of peace after the great wars, there has always been a tentative of stating something in behalf of the human person, in stating something in connection with human rights.
Yes, beginning with the peace of Westphalia and coming down to the point at which the United Nations sets up a special commission for human rights.
Yes.
And while this international issue is being debated, I think we ought to look at the situation in the world today. This is the first time, I think, in history where we can think of universal human rights. Universal, that is, rights for all men. If you look at the Charter of the United Nations, I think one has to be impressed by the way in which throughout the Charter this emphasis is made to reaffirm faith in fundamental human rights and the dignity and worth of the human person, in the equal rights of men and women and of nations, large and small. An affirmation which is against any discrimination in terms of race, sex, language, or religion. All men are involved. But the rights also include social rights and economic rights, which have been made possible by the progress of science, by the progress of technology, by the progress of industry, by the progress of political form. That, I think, is our present situation concretely.